Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Hey, good morning, 909 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin. Thanks for tuning in. I have in the room with me Carrie Rapke, who will not go on the microphone. I tried, and only when Zach is indisposed or in another country will she talk. So we do have Zach the Hammer Renstrom here in the house.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know, have you developed some kind of Thor hammer motion or something for...
No.
No.
But people that... So I know what you're referring to, that article, but...
Article on the Deseret News. Yeah.
People that know me just... Yeah, that doesn't really...
It's kind of ironic, actually. Yeah. Zach is anything but the hammer. He's kind of the... He's an old softy.
Scrappy.
Scrappy, but softy.
I can move fast and get the job done.
Yeah, but you're not mean and harsh and hard and...
Yeah, I have a daughter right now that would disagree with that.
Is she a teenager?
No, she's like early 20s, but I had a hard conversation with somebody yesterday and they were not happy with what I had to say. So
really?
Hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, there's an article in the Deseret News. If folks want to read along or look along or check it out, called, I'm getting to the time. Well, it's a long article, by the way.
It is.
Hammer or Money? How water providers are pushing change. It's actually a pretty good read.
Yeah.
But it's got to be 2,000 words or more. Big, long story. Yeah.
So what came is there's this group of reporters in the press, and they have what's called the Salt Lake Collaborative.
Okay.
And basically there were so many articles coming out about the Great Salt Lake that the news agencies were kind of struggling or they were missing out. And so they decided all to work together. And so it's... You know, you have the newspapers, you have the radio.
Which, by the way, is a rare thing in the media business.
Yeah.
Them working together, because I've been in it for 30-plus years, and we don't work together very well.
Well, and like the Salt Lake Collaborative even sent one, Ben Winslow, who works for Fox, sent him over to Israel to part of this. And so they've been very active on the Great Salt Lake. They decided to expand that organization or group to the Colorado River. And so they had a big event in Moab where they were trying just to get up, trying to teach people about issues on the Colorado River. And so I was invited to go.
You were there, yeah.
And speak to them. And
did you have spaghetti pizza while you were there?
I didn't. And I know you.
There's a place right in the middle of town. You can get spaghetti on your pizza. I'm not kidding. And it's actually, you'd think it would dry out, but actually it was moist and delicious. But anyway, back to the water.
I probably won't eat it, though.
You don't like spaghetti?
It just sounds too much.
Okay.
You don't stay scrappy by eating spaghetti pizza.
That's true. That's true.
So, yeah, it was really good. And it was very open in the sense that they were asking hard questions. I was very blunt with everything. I just like, hey, this is what it is. This is what's going on. These are the challenges. And from that event spurred multiple articles, which is exactly what we want. We want people to know what's going on. We want to know why.
Sure.
And so Washington County has been looked at now as a leader in the state of
Utah.
We're
the leaders, yes.
We really are.
We like that, yeah. And you're the leader of the leaders. Way to go.
Well, I don't know.
And Carrie is the helper of the leader of the leaders. There you go, Carrie.
It's a community event in the sense that our cities are very actively involved in all this, and we're just working together so much. And so a lot of what's going on is the state is coming to us, and even other cities in other states are coming to Washington County now and saying, okay, how are you guys getting it right? How are you still allowing economic growth? How are you allowing all this stuff to go on, but still have an effective 20-year plan? And so that was part of my discussion there about what we're going to do. And I just was very open, talked about the struggles and challenges and concerns and what we had to do to make sure things worked.
I don't believe this, but I'm going to play devil's advocate and say, well, Zach, what if you're wrong? What if all the stuff you're doing isn't right? What if we're going to go dry here in 2027 or something?
No, I mean, you always have those variables in life. And so what we've done is we have gone out and we're planning for a hotter, drier climate with a lot of growth. And so we're kind of assuming several worst case scenarios, meaning lots more people, hotter.
So your job is to plan for if you're wrong, just in case.
Yeah.
Okay.
If I'm wrong, that means we're going to have more water and less growth.
Oh.
And then we're going to have plenty of water. So it's kind of one of those things. And so we prepare for the worst. So
okay.
In the water industry, what we do is we prepare for the worst. So, like, we design our water systems right now. So let's say it's 115 degrees. Everybody's taking a shower. Their sprinklers are going on their lawns. And all of a sudden, there's a fire. And we design our systems to respond to that to make sure we have water.
Right.
And that's what we're kind of doing with planning. We're planning for worst case scenario. And if it's not that, then no big deal. We have plenty of water. But I can't not have water.
Nice. Now, the beginning of this article, and we want to credit the writer. Tell me her name again. Oh, there it is. Amy Joy O'Donohue.
Uh-huh.
That's a $10 name right there. She talks about you taking the job.
Yes.
From Ron Thompson. I don't know how much of this is 100% truth, but he told you it was not going to be that hard a job, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. And has it been a hard job?
It's been astronomically difficult.
Okay. Yeah. I was like.
But in fairness to Ron, the world's changed.
I mean,
when he came and first approached me and started talking to me about it, Lake Powell was above 60% full. Lake Mead was 60% full. You know, the Lake Powell pipeline, we had other states that were 100% supporting it. I mean, just a lot was happening, like very positive. It was all going in a good direction. Lake Powell, Lake Mead dropped dramatically. We have 2 years of like almost no runoff. And things just quickly changed. We had political things that changed dramatically during that time too.
Yeah. And it's been what, 4 years?
5 years.
5 years now. Okay.
Yeah. And so the world just kind of shifted, and that's okay. Like, you adapt. You have to adapt.
One of the things Ron told you was, well, make sure and get that Lake Powell pipeline done by the time you retire. That's not going so well, that part of it.
So he told me that by the time he left, he would have all the permits for the Lake Powell pipeline. So all I had to do was build the Lake Powell pipeline. And once that was built, I would just have to, you know, turn on the pumps.
Yeah.
And turn them off.
Yeah.
That's pretty
easy.
Piece
of cake. Yeah.
I mean, there's still, you know, running a system, everything like that. But I thought it would be pretty straightforward. And it didn't turn out that way. But that's okay. That's life. Like, you plan for the worst. You plan for things. But you have to be nimble. You have to adapt. You have to change.
Be scrappy.
You have to be scrappy.
Scrappy do. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's start right there. Lake Powell Pipeline, is it ever going to happen? I think that it says in there you don't know that it'll happen by the time you retire, which is...
I won't be built in my career. But it's one of those things that is part of the long-range plan for the state.
So does that mean everybody in this room will be dead by the time Lake Powell Pipeline actually happens?
No, I mean, I'm going to... I hope to live a lot.
Well, I mean, give me a timeline. Are we talking about 50 years or 30 years or so never?
It's hard because we have all
these
variables.
And I'm going to be dead in 50 years, by the way.
Oh.
I'm planning on it, yeah.
I hope to be around.
Okay.
Anyways, it depends on several variables, but this county at a certain point is going to come to a point where we have to say we need another source of water. We need to change our technology, or we need to, like... It just gets to a point where you just build to a point where you can't outbuild your water system, and we will get to that point in this county. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if all of a sudden our cities come and say, okay, we're not going to issue any more building permits, then, yeah, no problem. We don't need the Lake Powell Pipeline. Now, you're going to lay off 30% of our economy, but there's just these dynamics that go on that I can't predict what's going to happen in 30 years. But in 20 years, which... You know, I'll be around for 15 years. I have a plan, and it's all laid out, and that plan does not include the Lake Powell Pipeline.
Does not. Interesting.
But the Lake Powell Pipeline...
But it does include the Warner Valley Reservoir.
It includes reuse with lots of storage.
Okay.
And so we have to find that storage. Yeah.
Okay.
So it could be or it could not. We'll just have to... The nice thing about the 20-year plan is it's modular in the sense that if growth speeds up... then we will speed up the projects. If growth slows down, then we will slow down the projects. And so that's the kind of nice thing. And so if things speed up a lot faster than we're predicting, then we have ideas of like the Warner Valley Reservoir. But if it slows down, then, yeah, we'll put some projects on hold for a couple of years.
A couple of things before we get back to the water. Sure. Our phone lines are having issues today. If you want to speak or have a word or ask a question of Zach Renstrom, you're going to need to text me today. We just don't have the ability to get our phone lines to work. So text me at 435-467-5842. 467-5842. That's my personal cell phone. It's right here in front of me. It's got a picture of my granddaughter. Isn't she cute, you guys?
She is a cute girl.
Yeah. Anyway, you can text me. And then I knew this was going to happen when I started talking about my granddaughter and my phone. I forgot the other question I was going to ask you about water and
projects
and Warner Valley and that sort of thing. We'll get back to that. The hammer is with me today, Zach Ransom. Another article out, I think, in the Tribune talked about these. Is it AMI? Mm-hmm. Is that an app or meter or what is that?
Yeah, so it's a specific meter that's installed. And generally what we do, well, traditionally what they would do is they would go and read that meter once a month. So they drive through,
the old way. You had the water person come by and read your meter. Got it.
This reads the meter every 15 minutes, and then it sends that data to the city. And so the city gets that data, and we can learn a lot from that data. The biggest thing we learn from that data is who has leaks. And so we can go in, and so what happens is that meter is sensing, and if, let's say, in the middle of the night, if it notices that there's a constant flow in the middle of the night and it's consistent, they're like, okay, you are losing.
Something's going on here.
Like every hour there's 10 gallons of water going somewhere. And so it will flag the system and it will notify you. The other thing that we're doing is, in all these systems, is that you can get an app on your phone. And so you can actually look exactly what's going on at your house.
So I can look at my own meter anytime I want.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
So you can log on, see what's going on. So I'm located in Santa Clara, and the app shows my water and my power.
So you have access to it right now.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually grab your phone and look at it right this second. That's cool.
Yeah, and so the cities are all working on that, and they're all in different stages. So Santa Clara has it. Washington City has it. And so we're just kind of working with the cities to get it all deployed. And the reason why is that we've looked at this issue, and there was a really good study actually out of New Mexico, Albuquerque, where they went into some older homes, and they decided to take these high water use homes and do a complete retrofit, meaning they changed their washing machines, dishwashers, shower heads, everything. And then they monitored it before and after. And what they found out was there was two big areas of water savings. And one was the new appliances.
Mm-hmm.
New appliances are just more efficient than they were 20 years ago.
Like a lot more, right?
A lot. But if you go to Home Depot or wherever,
Lowe's, whatever. Anyway.
Any place in Washington County that sells this,
AWP.
Yeah. It's almost hard to find a machine that's not water efficient now. They all have that new technology in there. So the machine, you know, those machines, they're there. But what they found is the leaks. And that was where they found one of the biggest water savings is people had leaks and they never knew it. And so they went in and repaired those leaks and they saved a lot of water. And so that's one of the reasons why, since we're working on water so much, that we're like, hey, that's an area that we could really target and save a lot of water and allow people to have more control. And even Carrie, she caught a major leak on her home when she was not home.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. So, you know, people are going to say, well, what do you mean by leaks? Are we talking about a crack in a pipe? Or are we talking about a leaky faucet? Or are we talking about a leaky toilet, sprinkler system? What are we talking about?
So they generally set it up and say the cities have the control of that, of where they want to put those parameters. And so it's generally saying if you have like a pin leak, it probably wouldn't pick that up. It's not that sensitive. But if you're losing like 5 gallons per hour, it most likely would pick that up. I'm like, Carrie's was losing like hundreds of gallons. How much? It was a toilet flap that didn't close, but she was losing a lot of water that was just running, and the app picked it up and says, hey, something's going on here. So sprinklers is a little bit trickier, because if you have like a sprinkler head that's broken, it wouldn't pick that up, because it's saying, oh, yeah, the sprinklers are on right now, but it wouldn't know that particular sprinkler head was broken.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really looking at that continuous flow that's just going on and on and on. And so generally, if you have like a cracked pipe.
Hmm.
And Washington City turned it on, And instantly, like within the first day, it picked up a lot of leaks. And so they go out and they notify people, say, hey, you got this leak. And they, I mean, it was hundreds of thousands of gallons a day that they were losing in leaks. And now they're in the process of fixing that.
And the homeowners are like, yes, I want to know about it because it costs me money if water is flowing that much. Are we going to get to the point where we can tell exactly who takes the longest shower that uses the most water and who flushes the toilet five times instead of once or whatever?
No, the system's just not set up that. You can install that on your own personal house. There's a meter called Flume where you can hook it on, and it will tell you that data. But from what the city's gathering data, it wouldn't pick that up at all. It really is picking up like 15-minute increments or more of a, like a continuous flow. I don't know of any meter that the city would install that is as sensitive as you're talking about. So,
okay. I remember the question I was going to ask earlier before we started talking about the meters. That was about golf courses. I remember when I moved here. Like, I mean, we're talking 31, 32 years ago. People are like, those golf courses are just sucking up so much water. And we live in a desert. And how can they do this? And, I mean, and you've heard them all, Zach.
Yeah,
I'm sure you've heard them all ad nauseum, you know, over and over again. But how much truth is there to that? How much water does a golf course use? If someone builds a new golf course, I mean, we've got the Black Desert PGA quality course, and it's big time, and people coming to town, et cetera, but they built a new golf course, yet another golf course. A lot of people are saying, we got too many golf courses. So tell me what a golf course really does to the water supply.
So a golf course here uses between about 400 to 1,000 acre feet of water a year. So it uses a lot of water.
Mm-hmm.
What we try to do with our golf courses is right now we're working with them trying to be as efficient as possible. So like the golf courses that St. George City owned, they had a goal of cutting their water use by 25%. And so we're just trying to work with them to become as efficient as possible, because in a lot of ways, golfing is a big economic thing in our county. It brings a lot of tourists in our area. A lot of people enjoy it. And in a lot of ways, it's functioning grass because it is, people are out there enjoying it.
It's being used, yeah.
It's being used. It's not just decorative. And so our whole thing with golf courses is, hey, it does use a lot of water. Let's try to make it as efficient as we can and moving forward. And so right now we are working with several golf courses to help them become more efficient. And a lot of it is just like, hey, where are people actually playing? Let's rip out that extra grass that no one really walks on, except for those really bad golfers like me.
Like me, yeah.
And so all the golf courses have been really good about wanting to work on that or being efficient.
And that was kind of my next question. What do you have, or has there been a developer come in and say, I don't care how much water I use. I got the money. Just give me the land, or give me the water and let's do this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had someone in a couple of weeks ago, and we were going through he wants to do development, and we were going through everything, and I was like, you know, we've got this plan, and we're laying it out, and it's a 20-year plan. He says, well, I don't care about the 20-year plan. I'm going to be out of here in 10 years. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to make all my money, and I'll be gone in 10 years.
Wow.
And, I mean, it's true. Like, sure, but the water district, we have to make sure that water's there in that new home that's being built forever. Like, and even after I leave, you know, it's going to have to make sure that water's going to be delivered. And so, yeah. I mean, I thought he was kind of a jerk, but.
Do you run into ethical problems with, like, that one very often with your job? It seems like there are a lot of people that would like to fudge it or deny the reality sometimes when it comes to water. Is that something you have to fight?
Oh, all the time. Like but it's human nature. I will say that. But I'm the guy that has to go out and say no a lot and say, like, you know, I like this developer. He wanted to come.
No wonder your daughter's mad at you.
It's no. For another reason.
The answer is no.
But, you know, someone comes in, like I had someone to come in and they're like, I want a 10-acre surf park. And they were going to have like this really cool surf machine where you could go surf on it. And then they were going to have right next to it, like, I mean, it was, I will say, if you had unlimited water, it was really cool. But I looked at it and he says, what do you think? And I says, I think this is just not, we can't do it. And he says, well, why? And I says, well, you have 100 acre feet of water coming off that surf lake at least. And then you've got this over here. And I start laying out and I was like, I only have so much water and you want to take 5% of it. And he says, yeah, but, you know, these are high-end citizens and or very wealthy citizens. And he starts saying how all this stuff. And I was like, that's not my job to say, yeah, this is going to be, you know, a $10 million home, so we should give water to that home compared to a starter home. I was like, my job is to make sure that any home that's being built has that. And I'm not going to pick winners, losers, rich, or anything like that. I have to treat everybody the same.
We are grateful that you do have to say no sometimes. That you do say no to people like that sometimes. And,
oh, yeah. And they're not happy. They threaten me.
Yeah. Hmm? Yeah. You just say, well, I'm going to bring the hammer. You just back off, buddy. I'll get wrapped you after.
I'll tell them, hey, I know Andy.
I'm not the hammer. I'm a big teddy bear. So 9:30 on KDXU, we're with Zach, not the hammer, Zach Scrappy Renstrom today. And we're going to check weather. We'll be back right after this break.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back, 9:32 on KDXU. I'm Andy. Zach is here as well. Hi, Zach.
Hi.
Do you whistle?
Yeah, I like this. Yeah. Like, it reminds me of my childhood.
When I have Jack Lancaster on the show, he always whistles this theme, and it's like, dude, you're a better whistler than me. I found out the producer of the show, they didn't hire a professional whistler for this theme. That's actually the producer of the Andy Griffith Show whistle.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. And also that song is called The Fishing Hole. It actually has lyrics to it. Nobody ever, Andy Griffith sang it once. You can find it on YouTube.
I'm going to have to look that up.
It actually has lyrics, yes. There are lyrics. The old fishing hole, yeah.
So. That's a fun little fact.
Zach, thanks for coming on today. Just to finish up our thoughts on golf course, should there be, I mean, you have to balance, obviously, golf courses versus, you know, and the economic boon and development versus the amount of water they use. Should there be a stop to golf course? Should we not have any more here?
I don't want to say an absolute moratorium on golf courses, but if there happened to be one that's approved or whatever, I would want it to be really efficient. So not similar to what we have now, but there are golf courses that they kind of come in and they only put grass like on the tee or the, where do you hit the ball?
The green.
The green. Okay, whatever. Yeah. Yeah. The two spots that really matter. And so like I saw a golf course where that was green, and the tee is green.
And it's desert between.
And it's completely desert between. And so, or I've seen where they've put like artificial grass kind of in that fairway portion of it. Mm-hmm. And so if somebody got very creative and did something like that, so the water use was very, very, very minimal, I could see a golf course going in. But the traditional, just tons of grass with big water features and stuff like that, we just...
We can't do it.
Well, it would come down to... the 20-year plan wouldn't be the 20-year plan. It would be like the, you know, I only have so much water. And so as a community, we'd have to get together and say, okay, do we want to use a big chunk of our water for this specific use? And right now, the communities, and when I say that, it's all the city leaders and everybody getting together, they basically said, no, we want to make sure that we have water for other things right now because
drinking,
or you know, and we have several great golf courses. We have a lot of wonderful golf courses right here, but we want to make sure we have water for businesses, industry, homes, and stuff like that.
It's funny, conspiracy people like to say this. Well, if a guy came in with enough money and twisted your arm and lined your pocketbook, you'd change your mind. What do you think about that kind of statement?
So I don't get paid any more or less. Like, my salary set, so I can't get, like, that won't happen. So,
well, envelope, though, and you know, they slip it in the backseat of your car, the envelope.
I can't live that way.
Okay, good for you.
No, never have. So the question is, could somebody go out there and purchase water and build a golf course? And so there is some water that they could go out there and acquire to build a golf course right now. But it would be astronomically expensive, and they wouldn't be able to get enough water out there to build something like that. And the easy water that's always there, that's reliable, that's easy, that's all gone. And so they would probably have a golf course where one year it's completely dead, the next year they would have water. It'd be a unique situation like that.
Well, I just say, I wonder if somebody with a lot of money is at least going to go in and, like you do, maybe do some artificial turf and some smarter ways that will cost a lot of money up front, but might, in the long run, they might be able to recoup that money. Well, I guess we'll have to see.
Yeah. Like, where's that place where people hit golf balls down there?
Yeah, Big Shots, I think.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's all artificial turf, and people have a great time there.
It's
and,
fun. Yeah.
Yeah. So I could see something like that. Where, and if somebody came in with an idea like that, we wouldn't have any concern.
Do you think, well, how many golf courses have come in since you've been commissioner in the last 5 years?
Oh, really, the only one is one, and that was Black Desert Resort. And that was basically, the reason why that came in, is that has been, like, they had a contract from almost 30 years ago where the city of St. George agreed to supply them water. And then, so it was just an old contract that they had. And St. George City lived up to their contract to supply that water. But
unlike the federal government in the Northern Corridor, right?
Yeah. So, right now, I don't know of any golf course that's even being planned or talked about. And every once in a while, you know, someone will come in and ask, and I'll say, well, if you build a golf course kind of like I explained, I could see something like that happening. And I just never heard back from them.
Yeah. They're like, I think I'll call Lubbock, Texas. They have water there. But something. I don't know.
Yeah.
So what about, I know this isn't your purview, that you're not in charge of Mesquite or Las Vegas, but there's a lot of golf courses down there, and they are as dry or drier than here.
Yeah. So, like, in Las Vegas, they have limitations now. Like, I mean, 20 years ago, things were different, but they started changing. So a lot of those golf courses are older golf courses. What they do down there is they work very closely with their water district and trying to make them really efficient. Like, one of the things their water district did down there, they gave golfers GPS units. And so as the people would play through, they started tracking where people were at. And then they would remove the grass that nobody was walking on. And
I could see somebody watching my GPS. So I was in there. What the hell is he doing over there? Because that's how bad a golfer I am.
No, I'm not a golfer, but the one time I play every 5 years is like that. And so, yeah, they kind of go in and say, listen, 90% of the people are in this location. And so their water district pay to remove all that extra grass and just try to make them as water efficient as they can down there. But like, even down in Las Vegas, they're not building new golf courses.
It's not happening.
It's just not happening because the water's just not there anymore.
Yeah.
So it's a new world.
Okay, let's get an update on reservoirs now. Chief Toker going to be done next year sometime?
Yeah, so the foundation's done, completely done on that, and that was a big issue. And so right now we're finalizing the plans for the rest of the dam, and so that's kind of the portion that you see sticking above the ground. And so that's in its final review. Not environmental review, but just the engineers go through all that.
Make sure it's not going to fall apart.
Yeah. Well, we have our engineers design it, certify it. Then we give it to a whole new set of engineers.
Really?
And they go through it and you know, rip it apart and try to find errors. And then when those two sets of engineers agree, then we give it to the dam safety with the state of Utah that has multiple engineers, and they go through it. So it really goes through almost three independent designs or reviews to make sure it's safe. And so we're just in the very final stages of that. So we hope to put out the contract in that here in the next couple of months. And you'll see a lot of earth moving going on, but that'll probably take almost a full year.
So is there, when you're talking about the design, the original designers, is there a template they use? Because although every dam, every river, whatever is unique, and you're dealing with different parameters, there's got to be kind of a standard set, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the standard for an earth dam hasn't really changed for years.
Okay.
Basically, what you do is you have your outer wear level. And so Sand Hollow Reservoir is a good example of that. You go out there and you see all that basalt rock.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of your wear level. So that's when the waves are hitting it and going up against it. It just hits those rocks and kind of bounces off. Then you have a kind of a sandy layer, next layer. And then you have the core, and the core is almost 100% clay. And that water just doesn't flow through clay very, very easily. Yeah. And so you kind of have these three layers of a dam where you have your clay center, you have a sandy material-ish kind of, and then you have your wear layer. And so that's pretty much how all earthen dams are made.
A lot of people will be like, well, what's the big deal? It's just water. But I would remind people, water cut the Grand Canyon. Water over time, and I know it may take 100,000, millions of years, but water over time can can wear down just about, well, anything. Yeah.
And we're always constantly doing maintenance on our dams. Dams are not one of those things you can just build and forget.
Right.
And so right now we go out and we inspect the dams every weekly basis. We sit down with the dam safety. So they come down every year and do a complete analysis of our dams, make sure they're safe. There's a lot of work that goes into making sure those dams are safe.
And thank goodness that you guys are doing that. All right, question for Zach. This is a text I just got. Near the corner of Little Valley Road and Horseman in Little Valley is a large open water storage pond. You know what he's talking about?
I don't.
It is lined with cement. The water level in it varies considerably over the course of a week. Is this part of your system or is it something else?
That's probably part of the city system. I'm not at that level, it'd probably be the city system. There is the Washington St. George Canal Company, and it could be associated with sometimes they regulate the water out there for some of the people that still farm out there, but most likely I bet you it's related to a city function.
Okay,
so yeah, I just don't get into that quite a details.
Zach is a former Washington County Commissioner. Do you sometimes look at stuff and go, oh man, is it hard to stay in your lane all the time, or do you have enough to worry about that it's no problem? The Northern Corridor, for instance, really doesn't have much to do with you, and yet it's a big one.
And I worked on it as a commissioner. I try very hard to stay in my lane. I think it's important that I'm not an elected county commissioner, and so I do not get in there. I try very hard to stay out of their lane, and like people will come to me and sometimes like, hey, what about this? And I'm like, you know, I think that's a good thing. Why? Just go talk to them. And all three of them are very approachable. They're happy to talk to people. And so I've tried very hard not to get in their lane. They've called me a couple times to say, you know, asked me my opinion. I'll share it with them. But yeah, I think it's important that they're the elected officials. They're the ones that are running it. And it's not appropriate for me to, you know, play the backseat driver type situation. But I mean, I do have opinions, but I don't share them.
Okay.
I got too much to worry about anyways.
You do have a lot on your plate, so to speak.
Yeah.
What about the other reservoirs that are possibly in the works, Graveyard Wash or whatever we're going to call it?
So we have Graveyard, Dry Wash, and Cove right now actively being either in the environmental process or actively being designed. So Dry Wash and Graveyard, they're about 60% done with their design. We're purchasing the last little phases of property and getting those.
So they're going to happen.
They need to happen, yeah.
That's
a necessity. Which one goes first, Graveyard or Dry Wash? It's kind of one of those things, whichever ones we get the permits for, we'll go ahead and build.
Now, we know quickly. Graveyard is right there off of Santa Clara Road, which becomes Highway 91, down to the left there. Where's Dry Wash at?
So some people know where, what is that trailhead called? Anasazi Trailhead up there in Ivins, before you get to like Ivins Reservoir.
Okay.
There's right along the side of the road, there's like these stacked rocks, and they're quite high, and it's literally just across the street from there. It'll be a smaller reservoir, kind of like Ivins. Graveyard will be a little bit bigger. We're just kind of working with the engineers and also getting some permits. Dry Wash is easier because the district just owns that land right out. Mm-hmm. Dry Wash is owned by the BLM, and so we just have to kind of coordinate things with the BLM out there quite a bit.
Are there other parts of the county that maybe you could harvest some water from, New Harmony or Enterprise or some of those places that have more water available than they need?
So they don't have water.
They don't. Okay.
The district, it is in Washington County, so we are up in, we've gone up there. We have a system up in New Harmony. We have water rights up in New Harmony, so if somebody comes and needs water up in New Harmony, they can come and pay their impact fees, and we will supply them the water. And the same thing up in Enterprise. The Burl Enterprise area, their aquifer has had major issues. The water table's dropping, so the state engineers implemented a groundwater management plan, and so a lot of people that have had water rights up there are going to lose that water.
Really?
And so it's kind of a scary situation where you've literally had a house that's been built 10 years ago that's pumping, that has a well, and the state engineer in 5 years is going to come and tell them to turn that off. So the district's gone up there. We purchased a block of water that will predates any of the cuts that they're anticipating to make sure that nobody gets cut off of water up there.
Yeah, you don't want to lose your water. When they come and tell you to turn it off, you better have a plan B.
Yeah, and so we kind of created a plan B up there. But part of that agreement, buying that, like, we're not going to bring that water over the hill into St. George. They need it up there.
Okay,
and
so they're saying, yeah. You're just going to come steal our water, Zach.
No, oh, I hear that all the time.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
No, because they need it up there. Like, you know what's going on in Enterprise. Enterprise City's growing rapidly, and they need the water.
9:46 on KDXU. Let's get a commercial break in. More with Zach after this. We'll pin him down on the exact timeline of Warner Valley Reservoir. I'm just kidding. We'll be right back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back, 9:49 on KDXU with Zach Renstrom talking water. Today, Zach, can you maybe quickly summarize? We had a call, and again, our phone lines right now are screwed up. They'll be fixed by tomorrow, but they're messed up right now. Maybe just summarize what the caller had a question about.
Yeah, so the question is where is the water coming from to fill up Chief Toker Reservoir? And so it's coming from three sources. One is if you drive up Black Ridge up I-15, there's a reservoir right up there right now called Ash Creek.
Ash Creek, yeah, which is full, what, half the time?
Yeah, not even half the time. So right now, like, there's water in it. It wasn't designed to be a dam. They built I-15 and created a dam.
Yeah.
So it's just never operated well because it wasn't a good dam site. So we're running a pipeline up there. We're going to bring that water into Chief Toker. And Chief Toker will, it's just a better formation. We're doing things so it'll hold the water. There's a couple side canyons as you drive up I-15 that we're running some pipelines up there. So we'll catch some runoff off of Pine Valley Mountain.
Nice.
And then just the reuse. And so they're building a treatment plant right now. They're going to treat that water to a very high standard, and we're going to pump it up to Chief Toker. And then we're going to do a swap. So right now we have Toker Springs that is really beautiful, pristine water. They're using a lot of that water to just irrigate things in Tokerville.
Oh, we can do better than that, can't we?
Well, we're going to swap.
All right.
So we're going to drink that high-quality spring water, and the farmers will get the water out of the Chief Toker Reservoir. And so it's actually going to make their system better. It'll just the way it'll operate the hydraulics of it will be a better system for them, too. So it's kind of a win-win all the way around.
My son loves to recreate on Sand Hollow. He lives right out there in Dixie Springs right now, and he's out there paddle boarding and jet skiing and doing all the stuff that you can do on Sand Hollow. And he's excited when I mentioned that there may someday be a Warner Valley Reservoir, because he's actually moving fairly soon away from Sand Hollow. But he said, well, when's it going to be done? I'm like, well, that's an interesting question, son.
Yeah,
we don't know at this point, right?
No. So right now we're in the process of actually doing a land swap with the BLM. So we're 6 years into a 2-year process. And
into a how many year process?
So when we started the process, the Bureau of Land Management said, oh, it'll take us 2 years or 6 years, and we're still not done. We're getting closer. So hopefully within a year's time, the district will actually own the land of Warner Valley, and then to build the reservoir is more of a timing. Like when we get to that point, we need it, we'll build it. And so a little bit of that will vary upon conservation, will vary upon growth rates and a few things like that. But to build something like Warner Valley, it'll be a big one. It'll probably take 5, 6, 7 years to go through the design process and then actually build it.
Now, when I told my son it would be reused water, right, in Warner Valley?
Well, it'll be a mix of a lot of things.
Mix, okay.
Yeah.
But that'll be fine. It'll be clean water that you can recreate in, right?
Oh, yeah. So this reclaimed water is there's tons of standards on it, and we test it all the time. We have to meet these very high standards to allow people to recreate in it. So basically what's happening is we take water that could be discharged into the Virgin River. It's that clean. But we actually take it and we do more treatment to it.
Oh.
And then we put it through the system. And so if you looked at it, it's crystal clear. There's no smell to it. There might be a little tinge of chlorine, but not very much. But this water, you could put it on, like, crops, and those crops would still count as organic crops. You can put it on crops. In fact, they do it all over the world right now. So it's really high. You can swim in it. You can recreate in it. It's really clean.
Okay.
And we test it to make sure it is that way. Like, it's one of those things, it's not like we build and walk away. There's continuing testing that continues to go on. Part of the reason why we have such good water there is because our drinking water is so clean. And so since our drinking water is really clean, as it goes through the system, it kind of comes out clean. And that's nice, where if you were like in an industrial area that has a lot of these contaminants, then those contaminants will be in the sewer water. And fortunately, we just have really good, clean drinking water here in our county.
On our way home last weekend, my wife and I decided to take a little mini side trip over to Yuba Lake. Mm-hmm. Tell me about Yuba Lake. I know it's not Washington County, but what do you know about Yuba Lake?
Almost nothing.
Almost nothing. Okay.
Sorry.
All right. No, that's fine. It's not Washington County.
I know where it's at.
Yeah.
I've always wondered where the name Yuba came from, but...
From what I hear, it's you'd be damned if you do, you'd be damned if you don't. That's actually the origin of Yuba Lake.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, so, okay.
There you go. At least that's what my son swears that it came from.
I haven't heard anything.
I trust my son, so...
Okay.
So, okay, as far as lake, I mean, that's a lot of reservoirs we're going to have in the county. How many will it be once Graveyard and Dry Wash are built into reservoirs? And that's a few years down the road. But how many will we end up having in the county?
Oh.
Carrie?
Yeah, Carrie's doing the math. And she's counting on her fingers. The reason why we have to have them, though, is just we live in a desert in the sense that one year it'll be flooding and the next year we'll have a drought. And
we got to save some of that water.
Yeah, so the last 2 years have been phenomenal. Like right now, all our reservoirs are at 100%. They're full.
That's awesome.
And we're spilling water, actually, because we have nowhere to store it. But almost 3 years ago, I was getting nervous. Like it was really dry. We had really no runoff. And so we just have to store that water for those downtimes. And so that's why I really wish we had, if we would have had all the reservoirs that we're planning right now, they would all be full because
and we'd be in good shape.
We'd be in great shape because we've had a couple great years, and I would be able to store that water for some dry years would be phenomenal. And that's why we're working on it.
Carrie, did we arrive at a number? How many reservoirs?
Well, the district owns seven.
So five more, but probably 12.
12 by the time it's all said and done. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. And biggest right now is Sand Hollow?
Yeah. Sand Hollow is about 50,000 acre feet of water.
Is Quail second?
Yes. Okay. That's about 40,000 acre feet of water, and then it goes down from there.
And Warner Valley, we think, will be maybe the biggest, maybe close anyway.
It could. That's just that we haven't decided on an actual size. Part of that will be based on what we need, because we just don't build things. We build things what we need. And then also we'll go into the engineering. So they have gone out there and have done quite a bit of engineering, but they haven't done enough to basically say, yeah, this is the size.
Okay. Now, you talked about earlier in the show technology and how maybe a new technology will maybe make things a little easier. Mm-hmm. Is there something on the horizon that is out there that, you know, I mean, we talked about the, you know, reverse osmosis and all that stuff and how expensive that is, but is there something out there that if they can figure it out is going to be a major boon to your industry?
Mm-hmm. If you can figure a way to take salt out of water, that's the big thing. And reverse osmosis does that, but it's astronomically expensive. So it's almost 4 to 5 times more expensive to operate a reverse osmosis system. And then you have that brine stream.
Yeah.
And that just hyper, like, the amount of salt in that brine stream is really, really difficult to deal
with. Yeah.
So all over the world, they're working on this very issue on how to easily remove salt from water. And there's a lot of smart people working on it. And if you could have that technological breakthrough to make it so it's not so energy intensive to remove it, you'd make a lot of money. A lot.
And you know the billionaires in Dubai or whatever are working very hard on that because they, you know, they're in the desert and they're building islands and things like that and trying to figure out how to have enough water out there in the desert. So a lot of money is being thrown at it, but so far we don't have anything.
You know, when reverse osmosis came out and that was the first time we really could effectively remove. I mean, you could always do steam, but effectively remove salt from water. I mean, that was considered like a game changer, and it was. But we still have this energy component that is just so high. And it costs, like I said, 4 to 5 times more. So you think of your water bill and, you know, times in that five right now, Our average water bill is about $45, $50. And all of a sudden it would go to like $300 if we did that.
No, we don't want that.
No, and
we're already doing that with gas right now.
So that's the big thing, but a lot of people are working on it.
Okay. But if we can figure that one out, then we've solved a lot of things. I mean, 70% of the earth is covered in ocean water. So
and even here in Washington County, salt is one of our biggest issues we have to deal with. So we have the hot springs that produces, almost 100,000 tons of salt each year.
And is that more salt than the ocean has?
Yes.
The hot springs?
Oh, yeah.
A lot more?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And if you could figure that out, we'd solve a lot of issues. You'd be rich, too.
I'd like to be rich, but I don't have the time to work on that one. So
okay.
Maybe next time.
Sounds good.
Zach, thank you for coming in. It's always a pleasure.
It's always fun.
Carrie, thank you, too. This is the Andy Griffin Show, Mayor Thursday tomorrow, and then Open Line Friday. Thanks for tuning in.